The fishy feud between Lady Gaga and Katy Perry over who wears a mermaid outfit best and who ultimately is the power music diva of this generation has opened up on a new front. Bette Midler. The divine Miss M has made it clear there can be only one mermaid in a wheelchair, her. Joining in on the commotion, Bette Midler tweeted, "I'm not sure Lady Gaga knows that I've performed my mermaid in a wheelchair for millions of people, and many of them are still alive." Did Bette Midler just threaten Lady Gaga's fans?
"Put away your scaling knives, ladies. Don't worry, Gaga, we got your back."
Mm-hmm.
What Bette Midler doesn't want you to know is that the whole mermaid in a wheelchair bit originates from a show that Jackie Curtis, one of Andy Warhol's drag queen superstars, put on in 1971.
Join us as we fill you in on all the fishy goodness. The final Harry Potter film opens, raking in almost $500 million, breaking all financial records for a movie's opening weekend.
Is the fad of planking, taking photos of yourself face down in a plank position, over? Rapper Xzibit says planking is racist and not funny. What does he think of the new trend, owling, which involves taking photos of yourself squatting in a perched position?
HIV-resistant super monkeys.
Cher sings a song written by Lady Gaga.
And San Diego's Pride Parade had a record number of active military servicemen and women marching, with an estimated 350 soldiers showing up to celebrate. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I wouldn't be such a bitch to my co-stars, and we had fun time and play. You know, regardless of the diva that you love and celebrate and adore and worship, there's only one, and that's Cher. Me! Hi, guys! Thanks for loving me. Remember that my movie Burlesque is now on cable on the Stars channel. That Stars with a Z, so please set your DVRs to record it, because the movie made a lot of money, and I'm still trying to pay my bills.
It didn't make a lot of money.
That's what I meant to say. I'm trying to use Dragnosis. I'm a very successful entertainer. Everybody says I'm a very nice person. Hi, Mark.
Hi, darling. How are you?
I'm so happy that we can shoehorn Cher into a show today.
Well, she was coming later.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it away. Cher has something to weigh in on all this mermaid wars. It's more interesting than Star Wars, I think. And it doesn't have Jar Jar Binks.
And more interesting than the drag wars.
Yeah, drag wars that happened here in Chicago of the mid-aughts.
2007, 2008,
yes.
I don't know.
That's the mid-aughts.
It was the drag queens who hated on the trans girls taking all their jobs in the clubs.
And who won that war exactly?
I think the trans people won.
Yeah. Trans people win everything. Except
they're
equality.
Like, we're naked and we have boobs and we can perform.
Honey, if you got a pair of nice tits, it can get you far in life. You know, and then these all entertainers appreciate a nice pair of tits. Mm. And you don't even need a nice pair of legs. Sometimes just some fins or flippy floppy things.
You don't need legs at all. Just a tail.
Just a fishy tail will make you. So where did this all originate?
Let's talk about it.
Okay, so the Mermaid Wars originates with the fact that Lady Gaga has decided to work mermaid imagery in a wheelchair into her act.
Well, we got to start off first, though, with Katy Perry, though. We have to recap from last week.
Okay, but was Katy Perry responding to Lady Gaga?
So Lady Gaga did a concert in France. She was in her mermaid outfit, right? So she did
mermaid
that
in a wheelchair.
No, she did not do the wheelchair.
Okay, at she was just in a mermaid.
She was just in the mermaid outfit. And then Katy Perry
picked
that photo of herself and said, this is how Ariel would do it. And then Lady Gaga's creative director, choreographer said, there's only one mermaid in my life, and that's Lady Gaga. She does it best. Well, so now Bette Midler, who is also famous for doing a mermaid and also in a... Oh, I'm sorry. So after that, then there was a picture of services of Lady Gaga in a wheelchair and the mermaid outfit. Because how else are you going to get around if you have a tail on? You can't really walk.
Yeah, explain that one more time to listeners because you went way too fast, for especially the special needs listeners.
Okay. So there was after the choreographer chimed in, then there was a picture released of Lady Gaga in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if you're wearing a tail, how else are you going to get around? You can't walk. Have you ever tried walking in a mermaid outfit? It's not fun.
It's good to swim in, though.
Well, you can flop around, but I don't know.
No, if you, you know, most of these, like, mermaid outfits are actually ergonomic for swimming in pools.
Oh, because they have a flipper on the end.
Yeah, they put flippers on them, and so you can just kind of
undulate. But your feet are, like, bound together, or your legs are bound together.
So yeah, but some there's, like, YouTube videos of these chicks, and the thing about these mermaids, and women who, well, they're not really mermaids. They're not the Fiji mermaid.
Ooh, that ugly Fiji mermaid.
It's like a monkey with scales on it.
I knew a girl that looked like the Fiji mermaid.
But anyways, you go to YouTube, and you look at some of these mermaid videos, and the women who make them, they're mean.
Well, there was just that one girl.
There's a couple of them, and they're like, if you steal my mermaid outfit idea, I'm going to swim over there and slap your face with my tail. And I'm like going, hold on a second. If you are worried about people stealing your ideas off of YouTube, then don't make a fucking video about it.
She had a good point. That girl had a point, though. She's like, if you're going to make a how-to make a mermaid outfit, don't steal my ideas. Come up with your own way to do it. Because there's people out there, like, they see a how-to, like our how-to make tostones. There's already drag queens imitating that, I'm sure.
Yes. Okay, so it seems right now that a lot of female entertainers are fighting with each other over who thought of the idea first, who is the original mermaid in a wheelchair. And so Bette Midler is trying to set the record straight, so she says, by saying that there can only be only one merwoman on wheels, and it's her. She tweeted, I'm not sure Lady Gaga knows that I've performed my mermaid in a wheelchair for millions of people, and many of them are still alive.
I think she's trying to say she's old there.
She sounds like, okay, so if our fans are still alive, meaning our fans are soon to be killed or maimed or murdered? Is that a threat? Listen.
It's not a threat.
Bette Midler, you know, we don't take kindly to threats around here, okay? And we are on the side of the Gaga force, okay? She continues to tweet, Dear Lady Gaga, if you think a mermaid in a wheelchair seems familiar, it is because it is. You can see it on YouTube 24/7 with me performing it. Because I'm the star! And she completed her war of words with an amusing warning. I'm gonna fuck you up, you bitch. No, she didn't say that. Dear Lady Gaga, I've been doing singing mermaid in a wheelchair since 1980. You can keep the meat dress and the firecracker tits. The mermaid's mine.
Hands off.
Now, the firecracker tits, doesn't that belong to Katy Perry in the film Fireworks?
No, didn't Gaga had sparkler tits? Didn't she have something like that?
So they've been, you know, both Lady Gaga, Katy Perry and Lady Gaga have been fighting each other over who came up with these ideas and who could be more outrageous, you know, and really, I think Lady Gaga wins this war.
Well, I think so, too. But a lot of people are just like, they're like, oh, no, Bette owns it. If you go around and read these blogs, people are like defending Bette like to no end.
But what a lot of people don't realize is that Bette Midler stole it from somebody else.
Ooh.
In the book Superstar in a House Dress, The Life and Legend of Jackie Curtis, a drag queen that lived in the 1970s, died in the mid-80s of a heroin overdose. The book is written by Craig B. Heiberger. It's available on our website, feastoffun.com. He details how Jackie Curtis had her mermaid in a wheelchair act stolen by Bette Midler.
So Jackie Curtis was a Warhol superstar. He was up there with the Hollywood Lawn and Candy Darling. So a lot of people have probably been hearing a lot about Candy Darling lately because there's a documentary out there.
If you love the song Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, that's where a lot of people know about Jackie Curtis. Jackie was just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had a crash. Valium would have helped that bash. Take a walk on the wild side, Jackie.
Do So anyway, so Jackie Curtis wrote this play called Vain Victory, and it was featured on PBS during the TV show An American Family with Lance Loud. And I guess Lance took his mother to it to go see it. And so there is some footage up on YouTube, which I'm guessing is the stuff from American Family because it's such good quality.
So slow down, Kemosabe here. Okay. So in the 1970s.
This is 1971.
1971, PBS sort of broke new ground with this documentary series called The Loud Family, right?
An American Family.
An American Family focusing on the Louds. Mm-hmm. And one of the, and was really remarkable is that the son, Lance Loud, was gay.
Right.
And so America was transfixed on this series.
Right.
And it also foreshadowed reality television in the 1980s and mm-hmm. 90s and today.
Right. And from what I understand, though, is like it was kind of like understood that Lance was gay, but it was never really came out on the show.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. Because, I mean, I don't really remember. I did watch the HBO movie that they made not too long ago.
And so he took his mother because he was trying to make her more comfortable with the idea that her son might be gay. Mm-hmm. So he took her to see a drag show. And that drag show was created by Jackie Curtis, and it starred Candy Darling on stage.
Yeah, I wouldn't really call it a drag show. There was certainly drag performers in there, but it followed a narrative.
Oh, what are you, Ivy White now? I'm not a drag queen.
No,
I'm an entertainer.
No, I mean, it was like a full-on musical. Like, he wrote a musical for it. So
with drag queens, though.
It was a play, and it was a musical. And so Candy Darling plays a mermaid in a wheelchair, and Jackie Curtis plays like a James Dean type character.
Okay.
And so one actor that was in there, Paul Ambrose, wrote this, because I guess the show became like the counterculture to Hair. Hair was big on Broadway at the time, and so all the, you know, conservative people went to go see this counterculture show, but everybody else that was really countercultural came to see this show, because Jackie's shows usually ran for like 2 weekends.
I didn't know that Hair was celebrated by conservative people in New York City.
Oh, so it was a Broadway show. It was a huge
hit.
Yeah,
but it was an anti-war show, though.
Oh, please. Everybody was anti-war by that point in time. So let me read a bit from this book. Now, this is from actor Paul Ambrose, who was in the show. He said, about people, all the celebrities came to see the show. Lily Tomlin was there with Jane Wagner. Gary Cooper's daughter was there. And Sandy Dennis, who just loved Jackie. Somewhere along the line, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, Bette Midler saw Candy Darling in a mermaid outfit and me in a wheelchair and ended up on a stage a year later in a wheelchair wearing a mermaid outfit. Now, what do you think of that?
Yeah, what do you think about that, Bette Midler? I'd like to tweet. Has anybody tweeted like, you know, it's like, you stole that off of Jackie Curtis's show that everybody in New York City at the time saw.
I know, you know, he was a Warhol superstar, so all those people went and saw it. You know,
so it was, you know, stuff. It was the club people mm-hmm. of their day. And, you know, Madonna's been accused of stealing New York City club culture. But that's how culture goes. And now mm-hmm. drag queens do a lot. They wait for the next, you know, Lady Gaga song mm-hmm. so they can then lip syncing and bring their profile up on YouTube. Because mm-hmm. the public's searching for Lady Gaga. And so they're going to stumble across a drag queen who's doing a parody of hers.
Now, I guess Candy Darling fell out of the production because she said she didn't want to work with professionals, with unprofessional people. She wanted to be a serious actress. And so Holly Woodlawn, who we interviewed on this show before, she wrote a book, A High Life and Low Life.
Low Life. We're just dyslexic here today. It's A Low Life and High Heels.
Yes, A Low Life and High Heels. So she wrote that book, and she's also in the Take a Walk on the Wild Side, Hollywood. Yes. Holly, what are the lyrics to that? Do you want to sing those?
I don't
two?
Know it off the top okay. of my head.
So let me just read a little bit about her experience.
I can find it if you give me a minute.
Her experience as being a mermaid. So she took over the role. Now, she took over the role, and Candy Darling decided to come and see the performance. All right. Ooh. So the person that she, you know. So
these drag queens in New York City were like rivals of each other.
A little bit of rivalry.
So
there,
like the Betty Davis and Joan mm-hmm. Crawford of drag queens in the 1970s.
Yeah. All right. So this is Hollywood Lawn. So here I was in Candy's mermaid costume in a wheelchair. And it was my first time making the entrance. And I started rolling the wheelchair and I didn't know how to make it stop. So the wheelchair rolled right over the footlights and the little front wheels went off the stage. I fell screaming right into the front row of the audience and I landed literally in Miss Darling's lap. And she leapt up, pushing me off of her. She was screaming blue murder, accusing me of doing it deliberately. This absolutely brought the house down. Both the cast and the audience were completely hysterical. Here I was, stuck in this mermaid outfit with my legs strapped together, and I was seriously drunk, and I could not even get up. So everybody picked me up and reseated me in the wheelchair on stage while Miss Darling and her date just stormed out of there, cursing and ranting. The audience loved it and applauded. They thought it was part of the show. People came in the next night and were disappointed I didn't catapult into the audience. Now that's theater.
That's legend. Why can't all shows be like that, you know? It's too bad. I saw photos of Lady Gaga dressed up as a mermaid. It's not even half as charming as Bette Midler. Like, it looks like a body
it's
bag.
It's an incubation, though.
Well, the tail looks like a body bag. It doesn't look like a fish's tail. So
she's been tweeting, though. She's been saying things like, if you believe it's real, it can be real.
It looks, listen, Lady Gaga can afford a better costume, and it looks sloppy. You know, it's like a club kid who puts on a garbage bag and goes out to clubs and says, "This trash is a new black."
Well, you'll be able to judge in a couple of days because she tweeted, "Next video in just days. So passionate about the concept. Can't sleep. Visions of her surreal love. Yuyi is real if you want her to be." So yeah, Yuyi.
I want your costume to look half as good as Bette Midler's, if I want it to be.
So what do you think? It's just like, is Bette Midler a shithead for calling Lady Gaga out after she stole the concept from somebody else?
Part of me is that what I love about Bette Midler is that she says outrageous things. And she used to say outrageous things. Now she just winces when people say outrageous things around her. When she was on Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List, all she did most of the time was wince.
As Kathy would say stuff to her. She's like, oh.
Oh, I don't think so. And Kathy Griffin was like, I know that you're friends with Cher. Let's call Cher on the phone and talk to her. And she's like, I don't really think so. I don't think that'd be a good idea. Mm. And I'm just like, come on, Bette Midler. What happened to your spunk? What happened to your joie de vivre? Your crazy anything goes when you sang with the wonderful Mick Jagger, "I'll never be your beast of burden." Now you are the beast and the burden.
Well, and then, of course, what did Bette Midler, who did she base a lot of her career on? She, you know, Sadie Hawkins? They said that she took a lot of her...
Who's Sadie Hawkins?
Sadie Thomas or something.
Who's Sadie Thomas?
She's an old-time comedian. I forget. I'm screwing up her name. But then also, too, she did a lot of those the Bugle Boy things from the 1940s. What are those, the Everly Sisters?
Those were the Sweeney sisters. No, that's a Saturday Night Live. Yeah. Mark's like, I don't remember anything
right
now.
But it's like, so she borrowed all these concepts too.
Yeah. Well, that's what good art is. It builds on the past.
Yes.
It's not called theft. It's called appropriation.
Is that what it's called? Appropriation?
Well, yeah, I'm appropriating Bette Midler's mermaid in a wheelchair that she appropriated from Jackie Curtis. Look, it's okay to steal sometimes, but it's also important to write a nice check to Bette Midler if you really are just stealing it.
I don't think she is stealing. I think because Lady Gaga listens to this show and she knows about that mermaid.
She knows. She knows. She says that Lady Gaga in her free time, all she does is comb the internet. And she says, she listens to podcasts, reads blogs, and follows people on Twitter under other aliases.
Because remember, we said that she should be as a mermaid, and then she did the mermaid, and then we talked about the mermaid in the wheelchair, and then the picture of her as a mermaid in the wheelchair popped up.
I want people her to pull a Cirque du Soleil thing and dive, throw Lady Gaga into a big tank of water.
But I'm excited, though, because Cher has been tweeting that she's has done a song that Lady Gaga wrote for her. And then she said maybe they could do a duet together. And Lady Gaga tweeted her back and said, "At Cher, maybe a remix duet for the gays. You truly are the greatest thing to me." So that's,
you know,
the
song. That Cyndi Lauper is just fuming.
Why?
Furious.
She wanted to do a duet with Cher.
No, Cyndi Lauper wanted to do a duet with Lady Gaga, and Lady Gaga said, "I guess, maybe.
If
it's for charity,
She's like, "I'm just being nice to this lady." Let's listen to a little bit of it. So this is Lady Gaga doing a demo.
So this is Lady Gaga impersonating Cher.
Pretty much.
Oh, I think that's great. Hi, everyone. This is Lady Gaga. Listen to my demo now.
I don't know why you heard it inside, or what was said to make you cry. I hope that you can see you are the greatest thing to me. And when you feel like you're not enough, I'll give you wings, I'll lift you up. I hope that you can see you are the greatest, greatest thing to me.
Growling on the back.
It kind of sounds like a parody of a Cher song.
It does, doesn't it?
It was like, do you believe in love? I like the song.
I think it's gonna be a huge hit.
Stanley Tucci, throw it on the karaoke machine. I'm gonna be covering this. I mean, singing this in my next album. You haven't seen the last of me yet. Thanks, Lady Gaga, for giving this old gal one last hit.
You know, that sounds exactly like something she would say. That's going to be a hit. It's going to be huge.
I can't wait till Cher and Lady Gaga go on tour together.
And the disco remix, it'll be everything.
I know. And it'll be the ballad.
Yes.
And then small little Asian girls are going to be singing it a cappella, and then Lady Gaga and Cher will call them. Only Cher will be forced to call them on the phone, and she'd be like, you're so great. When I was your age, I got forced to marry Sonny Bono. Why are you running away from me? It's like, Cher has a, you know, Cher's kind of like Mo Sizlak in The Simpsons, the bartender.
She's not.
In a way, you know, because when she tries to be warm and friendly, everyone's like, oh, it comes across as creepy and weird.
Does it?
A little bit.
I'm sure that she's warm and friendly with people, no?
Sometimes. I just have so much plastic surgery and Botox on my face. When I try to smile, it just comes out like a scowl. Like this.
Let's thank the lovely listeners that have donated some money to help
the show. Hi, everyone. Happen. This is Cher. I want to thank personally every single listener. Right now, if you donate $200... I will call you on the phone and leave you a voicemail. I won't talk to you, though, because I don't like being around people for too long. All right. What is it, Stanley? I gotta be nice to people. God damn it, Stanley Tucci. Okay, so if you donate $202 right now, I will call you on the phone, and I will talk to you as long as you like. But don't make it too long, because I have an appointment with my massage therapist. I get stressed out, you know? I mean, really. So, anyways, how much money have the boys made today, Mark?
I'm not really sure. I don't know. But I can give a shout-out to some of the people that,
okay,
that donated.
Okay, I'll tell the listeners. It's $10,518. That's really good. That's basically all I spent on my last hair implants. They got a check here in the mail from a guy named Shane. He writes, hello, boys. I hope this donation helps you to your goal so I can contribute to listen to the fun and tragedy that comes through your podcast.
Tragedy?
Tragedy? Fuck you, Shane. I don't need your money. They don't need your money.
Foster, you already cashed the check.
Oh, that's true. Okay, thank you, Shane. I'm sure.
Stop with the share.
I'm sure that you'll achieve your revenue goals for the year. And when that happens, I would like to become part of your listener base that donates a regular amount every month so that you have a steady stream of income and can get enough plastic surgery and Botox to look as fabulous as Cher does. That's me.
He didn't really write that.
No, I added that part. Thank you for all the great interviews and introducing me to the facets of the big gay world that I didn't even know existed. Shane. And he has a gorgeous signature.
Oh, that is nice. And he signs it in red and blood.
It's almost like the... It's pink. It's in fuchsia. It almost looks like the Gem logo.
It does.
It's like truly outrageous, Shane.
And Sam in LA writes, no, please don't cancel the podcast. This is just because you mentioned my name like a dozen times in your interview with Brian Safi. Lol. So, Sam, how'd your date go with Brian Safi? Let us know.
Yeah, is he a hardy or a softy?
Oh. And then thank you to Brian in Panama City, Florida.
Hi, Brian in Panama City, Florida.
Melissa in Chicago. We're still waiting on Kat.
Yeah, Kat's slouching towards Bethlehem, honey.
Keith in San Francisco writes, love you guys. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you, Keith in San Francisco. I love Frisco.
James in Columbus, Ohio.
Thank you, James in Columbus, Ohio.
There's a lot of gays in Columbus. That's a big gay city.
Oh, my God. If I were a young gay man and I lived in the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio, I would move to Columbus.
Raphael in Norwalk, California writes,
hi, Raphael.
Hello, Mark and Fausto. I'm so happy and grateful I get to contribute this small amount to your show. I have learned tremendously from you and your guests. I hope you get to your goal and continue doing the great job you love to do. Love, Rafa.
That's right, people, because Feast of Fun schools the gays on what's important.
Mm-hmm. Like which Lady is Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Katy Perry. Feuds
between divas. Don't you love this shit? Yes, I mean, to me, it's like, when I discover this, it's like Christmas morning. I'm like, oh. Like, I'm foaming at the mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm ecstatic.
So, Billy in Vancouver, Washington.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, Billy.
Rudyard in Las Vegas.
Rudyard? How do you spell his name?
Rudyard. Rudyard.
What an interesting name.
I know, it is interesting. Roland in Switzerland.
Hi, Roland in Switzerland.
And then Danny Sanchez says, I love you guys and enjoy hearing the show every morning on my way to work. Sending some money your way to keep the fun times rolling. Hugs. And then also thank you to Ian in Chicago.
Thank you, Ian in Chicago. Hey, listen, if you want to kick back and go get a dip cone at Dairy Queen with me and Fausto and Mark, it'd be real nice. Although I can't eat too many of those because, you know, when you get to my age, the pounds put on really fast. I have to be on a low-carb diet.
And also, too, I mean, we have the Elvira wig up for auction now on eBay. If you just search Elvira Authentic Wig. Or just Elvira Authentic.
Elvira wig even shows up
it'll
now.
It'll show up now? Okay.
It takes a while for it to populate, but right now it's bid $430. People, that's a giveaway.
Yeah.
That's going to be worth $2 million in 10 years.
It'll be worth so much money. You can't believe it. Like, I can't believe I invested this small amount of money and look at it now.
Especially the day, you know, God forbid, the day Elvira is no longer with us,
mm-hmm.
which could be any day.
Any day now. You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
Divas, sometimes, all that wig and all that makeup might be masking,
a
deep darkness. That's why she is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
No, we hope for the best and we hope for
I want
time.
Her to live
yes,
forever.
Of course.
But nobody, as Harry Potter said, as they said in the final Harry Potter film, no one lasts forever. Mm-hmm. Loved ones die every single day. And that's why they need to live inside your heart.
Aww.
Isn't that a beautiful sentiment? I was crying during the Harry Potter movie.
But Elvira's wig can live on your head.
And Elvira's wig will outlive us all. In fact, in the year 3027, mm-hmm. when the chimps take over the earth, as seen in the documentary Rise of the Planet of the Apes, soon to be in theaters near you, we'll all be worshiping the late Elvira's wig.
So you can get this wig and you can wear it on your head if you want, or you can like encase it in glass or something.
I kind of want a robotics expert to buy the wig and have it be the central neuroprocessor of a supercomputer that becomes sentient, but has a nice pair of tits.
And if, you know, let's say you might not have the money to buy it yourself. Maybe you know somebody who does. Share it. Share this eBay auction on your Facebook. Post it on blogs. Let people know. Help us get the word out that Elvira is pulling through for Feast of Fun.
Hey, boys, don't look at me. I'm not donating any of my wigs for this. This is real hair, okay?
We should get a Cher wig. I wonder if we can.
You could ask the Chicago Cher to give you one of her wigs.
Oh, that probably has rats living in it.
Honey, it has roaches crawling through the thing. Mm. But you know what? You just fumigate the thing, and then you can put it up for auction. Maybe we'll get enough money from that wig to get ourselves a hamburger and a softie at Wendy's.
So, Fausto, what's happening with this whole planking thing?
Planking is dead, honey.
It's dead, but now some people are saying it's racist.
Rapper Xzibit. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to spell his name.
Xzibit.
Xzibit on planking.
X-Z-I-B-I-T.
So he says that Xzibit, rapper Xzibit, says it's racist. It compares it to the way slaves were brought in boats. The origins of the slave trade. I don't think that people who started planking were thinking, this is how slaves came in ships. Hey.
Maybe he's just trying to think of a brutal way to stop it.
It is kind of annoying. And I have to say, even when we were doing it with Chris Crocker and Devin Green, mm-hmm. I was doing it because it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's
cool.
The cool thing to do, you know?
I only did it because you guys made me do it.
He says that it's planking is the dumbest shit ever. Well, and, you know, when a rapper says so.
A rapper said something is the dumbest shit ever. Well, all right then.
Planking was the way to transport slaves on ships. I can't read. Some of these websites have so many ads popping over their stuff. This is from Music News, NME. Okay, so, and they have like 100 ads popping up over their page. Mm-hmm. Planking was a way to transport slaves on ships during the slave trade. It is not funny. Educate yourselves. Don't get it twisted. I care less where your dumbasses lay face down and take your pictures of the shit. I'm just telling you where it came from.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I respect what these people went through. I respect the hardship. But I just don't think that anybody who came up with planking is like that. Or maybe it did. I don't know. We're just, you know, idiots.
And I want to know more about... I don't want to sound like Michelle Bachman and be like, you know, start saying stupid shit about slavery or the horror. I mean, it was a genocide. But from what I understood and I learned about how slaves were brought over from Africa to the Americas is that they stacked them like sardines in boats to try to put as many human beings in these boats to move them across from one continent to the other. And it was a horrific act to do to a human being, and a lot of people did not survive. In fact, it was like a genetic bottleneck effect, and as much as like 80% of the people that were put in these positions died in the transportation. And I was thinking, why didn't they just put like 20% other
people are stupid back then. They're dumb. They don't think like that.
I mean, put 20% of the slaves on the boats. And then everybody lives, and then you don't have to like deal with dead bodies when you get to the other side.
Yeah, Foster, you'd make a really good slave trader. You would. Maybe you should think about that as a second profession.
You know what I'd like to do, though?
What?
I'd like to be one of the white people in the remake of Roots. You know?
Okay. Are they going to remake Roots anytime soon?
They need
soon?
To. I would love to audition for that. I'd be a great asshole.
You sure would.
I'd be like... Like Janeway, you know, like Catherine.
I just remember watching Roots as a little kid because I saw it on television when it first came out. And it was just like, all those breasts. You were like, wow, look at
lots
all these.
Lots of tits.
Lots of tits and butts.
That's why people were watching Roots. They were like, got horny.
Well, it was a famous book, though. And it was also, too, it's, you know, culturally at the time, it was very, very important.
I think they need to remake Roots and remember, you know, because all this planking stuff is ridiculous. Maybe it is racist. Maybe it is. Maybe it has to do with slavery. So, anyways, here's an alternative, owling. And so, just like owls kind of perch on branches and go, ooh, ooh. So, people are posting pictures of themselves squatting up on perches. So, you can do one yourself. Find the top of your refrigerator, climb up on top of it, and then squat on top of it without using your hands to hold on to anything. and then have your friend take a photo of you.
We used to do that. My friend Paul, I used to work with Paul at this Japanese steakhouse, and when we would party, we would get him to perch on things, except we would call it the pterodactyl. And then so he'd do that, and he'd squat, and then he'd raise his arms up, and then he'd jump
and attack people.
Yeah, yeah. And usually he was pretty drunk at that point in time. And we'd get him to do it like on the back of a couch, you know, on top of a table at the bar.
Well, that's where owling is taking place, mm-hmm. in the top of surfaces. That's where usually owls mm-hmm. perch. And so people are posting pictures of themselves all over the internet. One guy climbed to the top of his little house mm-hmm. and had a photo of himself perching, squatting. Mm-hmm. Because you kind of look like an owl if you're squatting and you're perched up high on a branch or something. Mm. I'm sure, you know, although planking seems easier because a lot of people just can't squat.
Yeah, but planking is hard, especially when you're doing it between two objects. Like your head's on one object and then your feet are on another. You have to have hardcore, like a good solid core to do that.
But a lot of plankers are kind of lazy people and they just lay down on the floor.
Oh, really? That's called planking, too?
They're trying to pass it off as planking, but it's not. Authentic planking.
I thought you had to be between two objects.
You have to. You don't have to do anything. You know, people pass off shit as, you know. And then there's the new trend.
What's that?
Sitting.
I'm doing that right now. I've been doing that all day.
I'm a fashionista, darling. Mm. I'm squatting and fish sitting and... Yeah. So when a rapper declares something dead, it usually is.
I'm gonna go along with it. I just never really got it in the beginning. I was like, whatever. Okay. And now, there's another one. Okay. There's another one. Okay. I guess
it was very popular in Australia.
Oh, really?
And in the United States, you know, now we're getting it, but it's like some memes, some trends. Mm-hmm. They don't catch on until later in some countries. And
like mermaid outfits.
Yeah.
Mermaids in wheelchairs.
I'm sure that Asian drag queens already, they're like, huh, mermaid in a wheelchair. That is so 10 years ago, stupid.
Well, 40 years ago now.
But maybe like they had a trend 10 years ago or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're like, why? You're so stupid.
I bet you can get really nice mermaid costumes made in Thailand or the Philippines.
I can't wait to be a mermaid myself. Mm. You know, I love it. I don't know why they're like not any hot guys dressing up as mermaids. You know why? Because you kind of have to hide the package and nobody likes to hide the package.
I know.
You're like, hold on a second. Because a mermaid is great. It's the best of both worlds. You know, because you still basically the fishy tail is a metaphor for the vagina. Mm-hmm. And then you get your tits. Mm-hmm. Whereas a merman, you get pecs and arms and he's, you know, upper body. But no cock.
Right, which you want. I think probably if like people that are like, you know, trans chasers, they probably like mermen more than like, let's say, like a gay guy would.
Yeah, a gay guy's like, hold on a second. Where's his penis? Oh, hell no.
Or
no,
maybe
no,
if you're
no,
a total
no,
top
no.
and you don't even deal with dicks at all. Then
well, he has no, I guess he has a butthole somewhere. I mean, fish has to shit somewhere.
Well, maybe he has a penis that comes out from behind his scale or something.
Maybe, or maybe not.
Or maybe not, I don't
know. Ask Taylor Lautner.
Why ask him that?
Because I guess he's been hanging out with Gus Van Sant mm-hmm. and his boyfriend in a bar. Mm-hmm. And all the paparazzi are like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on?
Well, maybe they're trying to get him for a new movie. Because he's like turned into like an action star now. There's some movie coming out like he's a 19-year-old action star. I'm like, holy cow. They're starting him younger and younger.
I know. We went. Like, they showed the trailer in the movie theater, mm-hmm. and the whole audience was groaning. Mm. Like, oh, this is stupid.
Yeah, they don't really want to buy it.
Yeah, and let me tell you, the only Anna action I'd like to see Taylor Lautner in is porn action.
He's cute, but maybe he'll get his acting chops. Maybe he'll grow into it.
Well, Taylor, if you're listening to this, mm-hmm. if you're hanging out with Dustin Lance Black, please use a condom.
Or and take pictures. He likes to take pictures. Just don't send them out on the internet.
I know. It's like, my boyfriend made me do that. And then it's like, last time we heard about Dustin Lance Black, he was threatening to sue all the bloggers for posting pictures of him, you know, getting it up the butt. Wait, and then I was like, I thought they were hot.
He's sexy.
But then his publicist was like, govern thyself accordingly.
Take down those photos.
We
didn't even show the porno photos.
That's the thing. We were being threatened to be sued by Dustin Lance Black, and we had done nothing wrong.
Well, we did use a picture from that set. It was just of his head, though.
Of his face.
Of his face.
And I'm like, what's the problem? His pictures of his face are all over the internet.
But it's from that instance where he was getting penetrated.
He had that cock-hungry look.
Yes.
And he was like,
Yes.
And listen, I'm
filled with love.
I looked at that cock and I was like, I wanted it inside me. I was just like, I was jealous I was in that party. But I would have used a condom.
Especially when you're having sex with a porn star.
Yeah, with porn stars especially. You know, I think actually...
It's risk assessment.
I think it's actually probably safer to have sex with a porn star because you can rent the videos and see exactly who he's had sex with.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost documentation.
Yeah, but that's only some of the people. Because, you know, a lot of those people, they use the porno film. That's just their calling card. Oh. To let you know that, hello, they're open for business. Now, not all of them are hookers, but many of them are.
I can't wait to get on the internet and have sex with a porn star. You know, one day when we're rich and famous and someone's going to sample that and use it against me. Edit. I can't wait till I'm rich and famous and I have sex with a porn star and I don't use a condom and I loved it. That's what he should have said. But he didn't. And listen, I think, you know, please use protection, people. He wanted to go away, you know, because he wanted to be a safe sex advocate. Mm-hmm. And listen, if you want to be a safe sex advocate, you have to acknowledge the reality that some gay men choose not to use condoms. Well, and let's start with that.
Mm-hmm. It's also a frame of mind where you have to really think about what your risk is. You know, if you're in a situation where you're like, you know, have to use condoms all the time? Maybe not.
Listen, people, sometimes the only thing separating you from crazy is a thin latex barrier. And you sometimes are grateful, you know, because you get hot and horny with some guy and then you're having sex with them and then you're done having sex. And then his mouth starts talking, and, you know, like...
That's when it's time to go.
And I'm like, Rush Limbaugh was right about everything. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. I had my dick inside you.
Well, speaking of sexually transmitted disease, what's up with these HIV-resistant super monkeys?
They're going to take over the Earth.
They are?
It's
Caesar?
This is the plot of the next Rise of the Planet of the Apes movie. No, I'm just kidding.
I wonder if since that movie's coming out and the title's name is Caesar, if we're going to see like a resurgence of Caesar haircuts. Remember when those were popular in the 90s?
Wait, you're saying because they name a monkey Caesar that they're going to see Caesar haircuts?
Maybe. They were popular in the 90s.
I think that's highly, highly unlikely.
I don't know. I know some people that might be like, they're just itching to bring back that Caesar haircut.
I had the Caesar haircut. I looked horrible in it.
Did you?
Oh, it was just horrible.
I didn't have the Caesar haircut because my hair is not that kind of style of hair.
No, they were trying to, it looks great on you. You look like a Roman warrior. And I'm like, I look fat in this. I don't look sexy at all. Okay, so HIV spreads through the human body by replicating itself inside of white blood T cells. We all know that. But the Sudi Magangbi monkeys of West Central Africa have a special type of T cell that can survive an HIV type infection. These are super monkeys who are, you know, genetically able to survive HIV. Are they the key to saving humanity from a global pandemic?
I think so. We're going to get some kind of human monkey hybrid and
human monkey hybrid zombies with AIDS. It's the title of my new movie. Sudi Magangbi monkeys have what scientists called a central memory T cell, a type of T cell that is not as hospitable to simian immunodeficiency virus, the monkey version of HIV, also known as HIV gone bananas. That's, I stole HIV that joke from Daniel Villarreal of Queerty, just have to say.
Oh, okay.
It's not my joke, but I read it, I was like, hilarious.
Thank you, Daniel.
You see, the average human T cell facilitates HIV infection by opening up several molecular channels or receptor sites that allow HIV to infiltrate the cells more easily. But these monkeys' central memory T cells are much less slutty. They're tight and don't open up quite as easily, at least not before a dinner and a movie. Daniel's,
he's funny.
He's funny. And I was like, you go, girl. Thank God that Queerty's back in business. I was so depressed when it shut down. you know? And they hired Daniel Villarreal, who's a hilarious writer.
I mean,
he's great. And he's a Latino brother.
All right.
All right, gay Latino brothers.
La raza.
La raza on the internet.
So
Sarah, representa.
Sarah Palin has a new documentary out about her life, I guess.
It's called Lamos.
No, it's called Undefeated. Could you imagine?
Is that for real?
It's for real. Undefeated. Because, you know, she's not done. And so it was, comes from Huffington Post, though. The guy, the reviewer went to see it. And this is what he wrote. Shortly before the end of the film, a young couple entered, walked to the back row, started making out, then interrupted their session and left. As Andrew Breitbart, who made one of several guest appearances, started talking about eunuchs. Then I was alone again, working. Instead of researching civil liberties violations or the war in Libya or the contest to elect the next president of the United States, I was both a journalist and the only member of the public willfully paying attention to Sarah Palin as if standing in for the pathologies of my profession. So nobody showed up to see her film.
Oh,
nobody.
Sad whistle for Sarah Palin.
Is this the end for Sarah?
I think it might be.
Michelle Bachmann has stolen her limelight.
She's hot, hot, hot. Palin is out. She's old.
Bachmann's where it's at.
You think you can do my nails for me now, Sarah? You looking a little old in those cheeks.
Maybe they'll run together. Who would be at the top of that ticket?
Oh, who's that lesbian top of that gangbang?
That'd be Bachmann.
Bachmann's the top.
Yeah.
Because her nails are trimmed. Whereas Sarah has long ass fingernails. You can tell of who's a top or a bottom by looking at the length of their fingernails.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. That's what lesbians tell me. I don't know if it's true or not. So Harry Potter, is it really spoiling the movie when you say that, you know, Voldemort dies at the end of the movie? It's kind of like saying Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Mm-hmm.
It opened this weekend, and everybody in the world and your mother and father and your neighbor's cousin went to see it.
It was almost $500 million in the first weekend. Can you imagine? That's a lot of fucking money.
That's how many people?
Almost like $470 million or something like that.
That's pretty much most of Americans went to see it.
Well, also internationally. So people went to see it all over the world. So that was the worldwide take.
Harry Potter.
Because when they make these movies nowadays,
Grand Harry Potter.
They don't really think about the American market as much. I mean, they do, certainly. But they really try and think internationally. Will this be a hit internationally? And that's why a lot of our movies are really stupid.
So, Mark, Harry Potter, thumbs up or down?
I really enjoyed it. I cried a couple of times because I was like, oh, it's so emotional, the ending. You know, you think this is it because you've been with this journey for a long time, and you relate to Harry, you relate to his friends, you relate to his struggles. We've all had our own Lord Voldemort in your life. And they always fucking come back. And just when you think they're gone, it's just like, oh, this person's back again. Why?
You have to remember that the most important thing is to be loved.
Yes.
And those who feel not loved should be pitied.
So what I did kind of miss from this movie, though, is the, kind of like the backstory on a couple of different things.
Yeah.
With Dumbledore, there was a backstory with his wand and also his friend at the time. And they were going to take over the world, but then they broke up. And basically, it was kind of like a gay love story.
Oh, wait a minute. So Dumbledore was kind of going to go in the direction of
the
Voldemort?
In the dark side. Oh,
so it was a gay love story.
It was a kind of a gay love story where they were going to take over like the Muggle world. But, they changed their mind. And then also, too, Dumbledore had problems with his family and his sister. You'll see her in a painting, like in the book. Like she, explodes herself and dies because she couldn't control her own magic.
Well, this is all very fascinating, but I thought that the message of love as a central theme of the film really resonated with me because I really don't give a shit about the books.
Well, and also, too, is like when, you know, Dumbledore is talking about like words have power and what's real. And it's J.K. Rowling's talking about her book, like Harry Potter's life. When Dumbledore is talking to Harry Potter about his life, she's also speaking to the audience about the power of words. Now, later on, when Harry and Voldemort go to fight, in the book, Harry says a lot more things to Voldemort, but I think they kind of took it out of the movie because I think maybe it wouldn't translate as powerfully in film.
So basically, Harry Potter was nagging Voldemort as he's killing him.
Basically saying the reason why, you know, you'll never, why you won't win is because you've never felt love, and I feel love, and love will win.
I love for killing
and,
you.
And so that's, I think that's kind of part, like, him saying that and bringing that up is also kind of like, you know, part of his magic spell. And then he's able to transfer that over.
So love is the what he used to kill him.
Yes, love.
I think that's a little bit confusing, but you know, I'd love to kill you. I think Voldemort loved certain things. He loved snakes. He did.
He liked to kill people.
But he loved snakes. I mean, he was really close to that little snake of his.
Well, that snake was part of him.
Yeah, well, that, aren't you a part of me and I'm a part of you?
But it's not the
same
thing.
He loved snakes.
He liked to control it. He didn't love it.
He loved snakes. He even got plastic surgery to make his nose look like snakes.
He just started looking like that because he divided himself so many times that he became mutated on the outside.
Oh, to look like a freaky snake lady.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like a 90s performance artist, Rachel Rosenthal.
I don't know who that is.
Google it, kids.
Does anybody know?
Rachel Rosenthal, 90s performance art. You'll have a. She looks like Lord Voldemort. If Lord Voldemort was a bald woman in the 1990s who spoke in defense of Earth.
Oh, I kind of, the Snape was kind of looking kind of... drag queenish.
It was very draggy. Yes. I actually, you know, part of me is that every time I see a villain like that, I'm kind of rooting for him secretly. Yeah. I'm like, does he really have to die? When we went to see the movie Legend, I Am Legend with my niece, she said, she had such a beautiful insight. She said, why can't the humans and the zombies just live in zombie peace? Why do they have to be fighting each other all the time? And I was like, why couldn't just the muggles and the wizards and the Voldemort just be at peace? Why did they have to annihilate each other?
Because you have to have drama. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a story.
But I mean, okay, but there's conflict. But what were they fighting over? Really? They weren't fighting over anything.
Voldemort wanted to take over and like control the muggles. And the other people wanted to stay hidden from them.
You know what it is that I identified about Lord Voldemort? Hmm. Is that really what he's trying to take over is the school, not society. Like, seriously, he's Lord Voldemort. He could go into any shopping mall and wreak terror. He could go into any wizard's home and fuck shit up. But what does he want to break into? The school he went to as a kid, because every gay man out there secretly wants to bomb the shit out of the high school they went to.
I don't want to bomb my high school.
They want to take over.
You think
they
want
to march in
Columbine.
It is a little bit Columbine-ish. It's like every gay man wants to march in there in a high pair of high heels and say, look at me now, I'm your new headmistress, and you suck.
Maybe that's it. Well, she likened the Voldemort and his followers, the Death Eaters, to the Nazis. But I like to think of them as like overzealous Christians, because what are they trying to do? They're trying to kill death. You know, they want to live forever. And I think that's what a lot of Christians are. They don't really think about where they are here on this planet. They're thinking about what their reward is going to be in heaven.
So much like villains, those Christians are.
The overzealous Christians.
The overzealous Christians.
So a man was turned away from a blood bank for seeming gay. So Alan Pace, he's 22. He says I'm effeminate. He says he is, but he's not a homosexual. Says that he was turned away for trying to donate blood at a blood center. Quote, he says, I was humiliated and embarrassed. It's not right that homeless people can give blood, but homosexuals can't. And I'm not even a homosexual.
So, yes, if you are a little bit light in the loafers and you want to donate blood, butch it up, fellas.
Butch it up. Lower your voice.
I'd like to donate some blood, please.
Not like Cher.
Not like Cher. I'm trying to talk like Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Buffalo Bill.
That's not a very good Buffalo. No? I know somebody that does it better.
Yeah, you sure do. Okay, so we're going to take some questions and comments from our listeners live here on Facebook. Matthew Van Mater. Matthew's been listening to the show for years, years and years and years. Your first apartment as a couple, what was it like? What did you learn about each other? Was it better or worse than you expected? Basically, moving in with your partner for your first time. So what advice do you have for him?
Well, I moved into your place.
You moved into my place.
And you were living with your sister. At that point in time, I probably should have just stayed in my place and had somebody else move in, because your place was such a pigsty and there was dog hair everywhere.
Okay. So what this is not a therapy session for you.
He asked what it was like.
I'm saying, what kind of advice do you have for people, young couples that are moving in together? Or want to move in together?
Well, you have to want... I mean, first of all, you probably should be spending a lot of time with them already, you know? And then, so once you move into them, the transition's not going to be as big a deal.
So the advice would be to spend a lot of time together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no reason why you can't just play house and still keep your old apartment.
Right. But I think sometimes people think, well, it's cheaper if we do it that way.
Well, people are financially strapped. And if you're young, chances are, too, you're going to be hurting for money. And so, you know.
You have to give each other space. And I don't know, I guess.
I would say, like, even if you're a couple, if you can afford it, get a 2-bedroom apartment and just have a second bedroom. Because sometimes, you know, your boyfriend comes home from a bar. He's drunk. You don't want him crawling into bed with you. Nothing brings a couple closer than separation. And really, I mean, part of the success of Mark and I's relationship, I'm going to say this, is we don't sleep in the same bedroom. Mm. And even though we sleep together in beds all the time, it's nice for us to have
our own space.
Yeah. And it really, like, you know, especially when you're bringing tricks home, it's like, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it really, psychologically, it's nice just to have a bed by yourself where there's nobody in the room and you can be at peace. Because I think a lot of couples, especially parents too, they lose a lot of sleep and they get so stressful with each other.
Mm-hmm. And if you, let's say you want to stay up and you want to read a book, or if you're staying up later, you have different schedules, you don't want to wake that person up, or if you snore, it's just a good night's sleep does wonders.
For a relationship and for the mind. Now, Peaches Christ wants to know, will you be attending Peaches Christ's annual Showgirls event in August?
Is it happening in Chicago?
No.
What did Eartha Kitt say?
If you want me, you have to bring me.
Peaches, you know, you have the power to bring us there.
Make it happen.
Make it happen.
John Barzinski says, I was in line for Harry Potter on Thursday night, and the girl that was next to me was talking about one of her friend, and she was like, he is a faggot. And I was like, whoa. I said that was very offensive, and she had no idea why it was so offensive, and she was only 13. Crazy.
Why don't you turn to her and say, I'm gay, and using those kind of words are cruel, mean, and insulting, and I don't want you using them around me.
Mm.
I will call the police. Say, you know, a 13-year-old kid is like not going to know.
He's
like,
I'll call the police.
You and what army? I'll call the cops on you.
Well,
and they'll be like, wait a second, is it illegal to say that?
She was probably just cranky because she was out staying up so late on opening night.
Mark Felian, sitting across the table from me here, wanted me to go to see Harry Potter at 3 a.m.
That's not true.
In the morning.
That's a lie. You're lying to people. I did not say 3 a.m.
You wanted me to go. You were like,
we wanted to go
is there
to the
any tickets
movie.
To go see it? And I'm like, well, I lied to you. And I said there weren't any, but there were. And there was 3 a.m. tickets because I know in the past
I saw
you've been wanted
tickets.
To see it.
I would never go to a 3 a.m. movie ever. And we've talked about this, and it's not true.
You wanted to
go to the midnight
to
show
it.
Because it's so much fun to see the people at the first showing.
We went to see the next day and was fine.
It wasn't the same.
Ray Sato, being involved in the creative arts field, such as yourselves, I'm curious. Honey, when you're an international sex symbol, it's always hard. I tend to have the habit of comparing myself to others in my field of work and sometimes feel inferior or I could be doing better. Ray, there will always be someone younger and hungrier going down the stairs behind you. Mm-hmm. So in life, as in the movie Showgirls, hold on tight to the banister.
Mm-hmm.
When you witness other podcasters, entertainers, video bloggers, drag queens, do you sometimes feel like that too? And if so, how do you deal with those feelings? Oh, that's a great question about jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
I notice that a lot of people don't deal with that well. And the best thing you can do is be thankful and focus on the things that you do have.
Right. You have to focus on your strengths.
And one thing that's really helped me not be a jealous person is the fact that we have such fantastic listeners that not only listen to the show every day and donate so much money and time and energy back to this production. To me, it doesn't matter if I have more or less than somebody else because I'm rich in what I do have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like no matter how bad things are going to be, our audience is going to take care of us. And I have faith and trust in them. And to me, that makes me feel strong and secure. I think jealousy really is tied to to feelings of want, of inadequacy. And so maybe it's better to, when you're feeling jealousy, say, what is it that I feel like I'm lacking? What is it I'm hungry for that I don't have that this other person has, and I feel that they're not deserving
and
of it?
And what do I have that can get me to whatever point that I need to be there for? Yeah, be assets driven.
Yes.
You know, don't focus on the negative stuff. Say, what am I good at, Ray? Like, I know you're a fantastic drawer, so keep on drawing.
And Ray is smart because she reaches out to a lot of these influential people on the internet. She's drawn us a ton of times. She's drawn Brian Sofie.
And Mimi I'm First.
And Mimi I'm First and other entertainers.
I don't think Mimi gave her credit, though.
No, Mimi was a hater. I told Mimi to give her credit, though.
I hope she did.
I was like, hey.
Because people like credit.
Yeah, and Ray is an amazing illustrator, and she's actually designed a t-shirt for us, but we're still in the process of working on that. And I think, you know, if you're feeling jealousy, you need to sometimes speak out about it, not with that person that you're jealous about, but with your friends, and think, maybe, how can I collaborate with this person? How can I, you know, sometimes imitating them or mimicking them in a way, but of course, then you'll get accused of stealing their ideas, and that isn't constructive either.
So Jay Hager writes, why did Dobby the house elf have to die?
Is it Dobby?
Dobby.
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 Dobby Gillis.
I think it's Dobby.
It's Dobby.
What did I say? Dobby?
Yeah, you said Dobby.
Oh, okay.
Dobby. Why does Dobby have to die? Because Dobby spoke of himself in the third person, right?
I think he did.
Is Dobby dying?
Yes, Harry Potter. Dobby's dying.
Yes. I don't know why they killed Dobby.
I think it made it because people had to die, and she couldn't kill people off that were like real people, I don't think.
Characters that she could make money off of. Because let's face it, there's going to be Harry Potter babies. I mean, those kids that were shoving on the train at the end of the movie, you know they're going to be like the new adventures of Harry Potter's son.
What are they going to battle now? Because Voldemort's dead.
Ennui and a sense of general malaise.
So Kevin Wolf says, any tips for making a long distance move, making the move from Oklahoma City to Chicago next month? Well, welcome to the city, Kevin Wolf.
Wolf, honey, come give us a call.
I would say pack tightly.
If you know what I mean. I say have a yard sale. At least a month beforehand, try to get rid as much stuff as you can. Those IKEA shelves are not worth moving. Dump them in the dumpster. Buy new ones if you can. I know it's a little expensive, but you're going to save yourself a lot of heartache and headaches in doing that.
Yeah.
Rent yourself a U-Haul and fill it up with the stuff. And whatever you can't fit, put in that U-Haul, get rid of it, donate it.
And start packing now.
Yes.
The last thing you want to do the day before you move is do a frenzy of packing. Just start packing now.
If you're going to look for an apartment in Chicago, my advice is to stay with a friend, rent a car when you're in town, and go look around. And bring a cashier's check in your hand to pay the deposit if you find a place that you like. Because a lot of people lose apartments just because they go get a cashier's check and they, you know. And so you can, you know, what you can do is you say, like, I have $500 in a cashier's check. You know, estimate what an average amount of a deposit's going to be if you're going to live by yourself with another friend.
And don't rent an apartment from Lady Vera Parker. She'll take your money and...
Well, you want to see the apartment. Don't ever give a deposit if you've not walked into an apartment with the keys with a real estate agent. Ask to see some sort of documentation too. There's nothing unreasonable about that. Jeff Gerard, I love when you guys are more educational and investigative. Since y'all are still funny and charming anyways, it inspires me to do good with my YouTube interviews, a different venue. I got a total ear boner when listening to your AT&T Glad episode. So he's giving us topics.
So there's a bunch of topics here. I'll read one. He wants us to interview LGBT YouTube personalities like me, Bradley Voorhees, Beck Rosada Lewis, etc. Okay.
Go for it. Yes. Okay.
Yes, we'll do it.
Podcasters paying fans and followers for coming up with shows ideas.
Does that happen? Who pays people? I mean, I would love to hire an intern, but
yeah,
what are you going to do?
But we do have a couple of people who volunteer. Angela Wells most recently helped research the interview with the fabulous ice skating hunk.
Blake Skellerud.
From New Zealand.
I know that she made that thing a breeze for us.
And Ray Sato did all the outreach and work in booking Brian Safi.
So if you're a fan of somebody and you think, hey, this person should come on Feast of Fun, reach out to them and just say, hey, listen, are you interested in doing an interview on Feast of Fun?
But if you do that, you have to help us research and write the questions and not right. make the question be, what's it like being you?
What's it like being famous?
How do I get your job?
Do you like blue or black?
Now you have to have the way you do a good interview question is you think of getting them to say things about themselves or present an interesting story, or to say things about themselves that they've never said before. And so you have to guess what they might say that they haven't said and phrase a question in a way to pull out that information.
Yeah.
James Hammond III, I don't want to be thrown to the back of the bus. Then, if you don't want to sit on the back of the bus, limp. Ken Sanders, I hope you schooled her sorry little bot, John. Feast, how long will Casey Anthony last once she is actually out loose and unattended by herself out in the wild?
Do you think people are really going to come after her? I think anybody who's going to come out after her has probably got to screw loose themselves. Listen, it might not be justice, but it's a certain kind of justice, and she's free. Let it go, people. And maybe that little bitch had it coming.
Jesus.
I'm just kidding. I'm just like, listen.
You mean Casey Anthony or her,
just like,
her daughter?
The other thing is, the thing is, though, too, is I just can't get caught up in her. It's
not focusing. It's not asset driven.
Right.
And here on Feast of Fun and in activism and in life, you want to focus on what works. Mm-hmm. Even when there's injustice. Mm-hmm. I mean, when there's horrible injustice, and we live in sometimes, you just hear about these corporations getting away with bloody murder, with these crazy, violent Christians in your own backyard, like Michelle Bachmann, rising in power in the ranks. You know, people are practically stuffing money down her throat instead of cocks. Her husband's cock. I love what Bill Maher said. It's like her husband, she will do whatever her husband asks her to do, and instead of having a three-way or covering herself in Miracle Whip, he asked her to become a lawyer.
A tax lawyer. Yeah. So David A. Huggins writes, I know that both of you are sci-fi fans based on liking Star Trek, which now streams on Netflix.
Yay!
If so, do you have any favorite gay sci-fi characters based on books, films, or anything? Not from Star Trek.
Yes, not from Star Trek.
Who's any favorite gay sci-fi characters?
All the good gay sci-fi characters are on Star Trek. Mm.
Well, I'm just trying to think of I really enjoyed Firefly. I liked Battlestar Galactica. I just, you know, but none of these people are ever gay.
I'm picky about the sci-fi shows I'm into. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, I'm really at the core of me, I'm a diehard Carl Sagan fan. And Star Trek really carried so much of his writing and spirits. And that's why it got me involved in Star Trek. At Star Wars and all these other stuff, I'm like, even Battlestar Galactica got annoying after a while.
Yeah, it totally got annoying after a while.
But I think, you know, if you can have a sci-fi series that actually asks some really challenging questions about the nature of the human experience and technology, then you can go somewhere. But the problem with a lot of sci-fi series is that they're mostly fantasy disguised with mumbo jumbo. And they're not truly science fiction. They're fantasy fiction.
What I'm really disappointed by is the American reboot of Torchwood. I just think it just doesn't have the same kind of camp value, the fun and the weirdness that the British version had. Now I think they're trying to get all serious, and I'm not into it. And another show that sucks on sci-fi right now is Alphas. I tried watching Alphas, and I'm just like, ugh, what a horrible show.
Harry Potter hitting theaters. Which character do you find the most attractive? Who do you want to bone in the Harry Potter? Harry Potter? Daniel Radcliffe?
He didn't get any speaking lines this line, but they did show him in the room of requirement, the blonde that was eating the sundae that really wanted to go after Hermione before.
Yes. He's the one I'm hottest for.
Whatever happened to him? Where'd he go?
He's doing porn now.
Do you think the reason why so many gay professionals go into theater, performance art, and entertainment is because they crave approval, possibly acceptance that they didn't get when they were little?
Duh, yes, of course.
Perhaps that's it too, but I also think though too is like because you are gay people, you tend to be very creative because, you know, you're different than other people, so you see things differently and you're better adapted to this kind of thing.
You see, you're good because also you've spent a lot of your life hiding who you are in some sense, that it also makes you a little bit more attuned to seeing things in a different ways as an outsider.
Yes.
And that's critical to being a good artist or a shaman or a storyteller.
Or a problem solver.
Or a priest even. Mm. You know, a good priest is able to lecture to his... what is a priest's audience called? His
congregation. Yeah.
He's able to give good feedback to his congregation because he's able to see things from an outsider's perspective. Mm-hmm. He can look from the outside in and see what the group is struggling with that maybe the group isn't noticing themselves. Mm-hmm. And so a good leader is going to be a little bit gay, is going to be a little bit of an outsider. And that's why we get attracted to them.
Absolutely. He also goes on to write, Days of Our Lives received a gay character last week, Freddie Smith, that hottie from 90210. What do you think of him? And adding to Freddie Smith, he can come out, come over, and come on to me anytime he wants. I've seen pictures of him on the net. He is hot. So, but I've stopped watching soap operas. I just don't see him anymore.
I'm saving myself for Chris Evans and Captain America, who's coming to theaters next week.
You're so excited for that.
And we'll maybe be talking to a Captain America aficionado who has a pretty good body.
All right.
Who can hold his own.
Speaking of Captain Americas, San Diego had their gay pride parade this past weekend and about 350 active military servicemen and women showed up to march in the parade. So, you know, don't ask, don't tell may still kind of quasi be in effect or not. Who knows? It's in some kind of weird limbo at this point in time. So these people actually did take a risk showing up, but they're out and they're proud. And they're
showing
where
it's at. I like calling
it
donut, don't tell.
Donut, don't tell.
It's like when you cheat on your diet by eating donuts. Donut, don't tell. Donuts, don't tell.
So we'll probably see more and more of those at the gay pride parades over the years now.
I hope they're not wearing much in clothing.
Because they have to be respectable. They still are part of the military. So you won't see them in thongs.
Oh, that's awful. What is the point of all that military training if not you can see their massive sculpted bodies?
You have to
hook up
with them later, you know?
I want to hook up with a Navy SEAL. Oh, I thought it would be cute like a seal, not like a muscle stud. Okay, we'll have sax.
All right. Can you play the trumpet? They was trying to get them to play trumpets or saxophone. No, it was a walrus that played the saxophone.
Is it walrus? I don't think that technically, Mark, walruses in aquatic parks are actually playing the saxophone.
Oh.
They're just holding a plastic saxophone-shaped toy, and they're playing saxophone
music. Oh, I was thinking
about
getting them into my band.
My all aquatic band with Lady Gaga as the lead singer as a mermaid. Under the sea, under the sea, there'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea.
I want to remind the listener, we can't do the show without your help, so please visit feastoffun.com/donate and make a contribution to make this show happen, because we really can't do it without you.
Honey, we are starving to death over here. It's like poor Mark is wasting away, but he looks like Karen Carpenter.
Oh, that's intentional.
It is?
Well, I'm trying to lose weight.
Oh, well, you look fabulous then.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so you're just wasting away to nothing.
Well, let's leave these people to find people with a parody song about Marcus Bachman.
Oh, you know the Bachmans is just going to explode in a rainbow catastrophe. Yes, it's something awful is going to happen.
So this song is based on Britney Spears' Womanizer, except it's Marcus Bachman Therapizer.
Who did
Therapizer.
It?
It's done by Sean Chapin 1 on YouTube.
Thank you, Sean Chapin 1. And if you have any fabulous stuff that you want to share with our audience, please feel free to do so. Feastoffun.com/fresh. Post something fabulous and it'll make it on the show. Like this.
Like this.
Thank you
Therapizer,
so.
Therapizer.
Therapizer, therapizer. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
So, what brings you in here today? Oh, you're gay. Oh, we can take care of that. We'll convert you so you can have a normal life.
DNA, where you from? How's it going? I know you got a clue what you're doing. You can pray the gay okay to everyone out here, but I know what you are. What you are, Bachman. Look at you, telling more than just a fable. Marcus, you, converting patients with the Bible. Lying like a bigot, but I call him like I see him. I know what you are. What you are, Bachman.
Therapizer, therapizer, you're a therapizer. All therapizer, oh, you're a therapizer, Marcus. You are. Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You got us going. We're all so sinful. We shouldn't trust you. You therapizer.
Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You discipline us. You educate us. You're nothing but a therapizer.
DNA, I see your dirty propaganda. The truth about the homosexual agenda. I know that you convert so many, make them straight when they're barbarians. Who we are, that's just who we are, Bachman. Look at me, you must mistake, you're a sucker to think that I would be a victim, not another. So say it, play it how you want it, but no way, I'm never gonna fall for this poisonous discipline, Bachman.
Therapizer, you're a therapizer, Marcus. You are. Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You got us going. We're all so sinful. We shouldn't trust you. You therapizer.
Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You discipline us. You educate us. You're nothing but a therapizer.
Maybe if they all went to a different place. They could be alright and maybe they could live with love, but they can't cause of this. You! Therapizer, Marcus. Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You got us going. We're all so sinful. We shouldn't trust you. You therapizer.
Boy to try to cure, I know just what you are.
You discipline us. You educate us. You're nothing but a therapizer.
No, gay people are not barbarians. No, not even Paul Saint either. No, only if they're